Thanks for the introduction. So for those of you who never heard about sculptures, let me very briefly summarize it in a few words. So sculptures is a showcase of the GNode OS framework as a desktop OS. And the GNode OS framework is characterized by being a component-based operating system framework, which follows a hierarchical distribution of resources. And it also has supports of several microkernels. And as a side note, what I also want to add, because we had this in a previous talk, the framework heavily uses asynchronous communication between components and tries to avoid synchronous IPC wherever possible. So the official sculpt image that we publish twice a year that for x86 uses the Nova microhypervisor. We also had a talk today about that. It's an older version of the Nova microhypervisor, which has been modified a bit. And for ARM platforms, we use a custom kernel, which we also use as a vehicle for test driving new ideas. So, and this is also what this talk will be about. So it's about a custom kernel. But first, since this talk is about scheduling, let's go a little bit into the user perspective. What happens if you install a component onto Sculpt.js is the user is faced with a decision in which scheduling group to run a component. There are four scheduling groups, driver for latency-sensitive components, multimedia for audio, video, and stuff like that. Default is for basic desktop applications, just bare-bones computing, and background, of course, for some background-based effort tasks. And these scheduling groups are then mapped to scheduling priorities on underlying kernel. And since most microkernels that are supported are using fixed priority-based scheduling, we have the issue that, for instance, a broken device driver, we port device drivers from the Linux kernel, broken device driver can lead to starvation of the lower priorities. So when designing and implementing the GNode's custom kernel in around about 2014, the idea came up to add quotas to a priority-based scheduling. So by setting a quota for a component, when the component exceeds its quota, its scheduling is degraded. So basically, then it's scheduled in a background in a round-robin manner. This effectively mitigates the broken device driver scenario that I mentioned before, and also nicely enables the hierarchical distribution of quotas. But unfortunately, the downside is that setting these quotas requires tuning for the workload that you're running and also for the platform you're running on. So finding the values that work for every workload and platform it's not possible, basically. So it also always requires tuning. So for a desktop OS, which you want to run everything on, this is turned out to be not the best solution. So let's take a step back. What do we actually want to have? So first of all, we want to have a fair scheduling. On a desktop OS, that's very important. So if every component gets a fair share of the CPU, you prevent starvation. And also some threads need to get a low latency, and other threads don't care much about latency. They just want to do some computing. What's also important to us is that it's easy for the user to configure. So we don't want to confront the user with a lot of decisions, how to set scheduling parameters, and so on. And lastly, it should also be robust against misconfiguration. So if you don't get it right, it should degrade gracefully and not being broken entirely. So actually 2 years ago here at Fosdem, Stefan and I had the idea to revise the scheduling of the custom kernel. And how did we do that? So first of all, when you set out to do this, you do some research. You review what's currently the newest and what's in the literature or what are the basic things. So let's start with a very simple one. I think everyone should know round robin scheduling. Just to summarize, every thread, every component, or every thread gets, they take turns. Each thread gets an equal share, and you have a fixed time slice length. So that's pretty easy. That's very fair. But yeah, if one thread should get a little bit more than the other, then you need to add weights. So if you add weights to each thread, then each thread gets a share of the CPU that's proportional to the weight. As soon as you do this, however, you can come up with different schemes of interleaving. So in this example here, if we have the three threads A, B, and C, A has a weight of 4, B and C both have weight of 2, then we can have this interleaving scheme shown here to the right. So we run ABC, ABC, and then 2 times A. This would be one, yes, super schedule if you say so. The downside here is that you see the distance between two executions of B differs. So B actually gets some sort of a varying latency. You can do this more uniformly, for instance, with this schedule, where the distance between two executions of B is equalized. How this is typically implemented, it's round-based implementation, which has the downside that when you add threads, which you do when you have a running dynamic workloads, when you add threads, then the number or the number of rounds that you need for the schedule might change, and then it's not trivial to transition between these scenarios. So what we found is what I call here virtual time scheduling, which is a nice trick to come up with a similar schedule as we saw before in the weighted round robin, but much easier to implement. So each thread has a weight and a virtual time, and the scheduler simply picks one of the threads which has the minimum virtual time in the system on the CPU. And then when it ran the thread, the virtual time of the thread is increased by the real time that it ran divided by the weight of the thread. So simple idea. So let's look at an example. Let's say we run each thread for 4 units of real time here. So we start, so all threads start with the same virtual time. It's 0. We first run A for real time units, as said. And so because A has weight of 4, its virtual time is only increased by 1. So then we take B, its virtual time is increased by 2. Similar for C. And now A has the minimum virtual time again. We pick it. And let's say we run it again for 4 real-time units. And then after that, we switch to B. So this is kind of random in this example. You could also choose A again. Let's say we choose B. And then C again. And now when A's turn comes up again, we run it twice, because after running it for 4 real-time units, it still has the minimum virtual time. It's selected again. So as you see, we come up with a similar schedule as we saw before in the weighted round robin. So when putting this idea into practice, of course there are more detailed questions that we have to answer. So one of these is how to assign the weights to the threads. I mentioned before that with the assignment of quotas, so somehow you need to come up with sensible values. Also, you have to determine the length of the time slice for which each thread is scheduled. Also, what do we do when threads are sleeping? And also the last and most important point here is what was our initial requirement. How can we tune this to achieve better latency or lower latency for some threads? And maybe higher latency for others. We found two existing and particularly interesting solutions. One is the EEVDF, which is a new replacement for the Linux completely fair scheduler. And we found the BVT, which stands for borrowed virtual time. And this is actually what we ended up using when implementing and designing our new scheduler. The approach that we took here was not to jump in right away and implement it, but of course we started with some sort of experimentation, simulate some scenarios, play with parameters just to understand what this scheduling scheme does and double check whether this is really what we want to have. So let's start with the weight assignment. So the proportional share that a thread gets in the system is the result of the sum of the weights of threads, the active threads, divided by the weight of the thread. So when we add threads, the proportional share of the thread actually changes. For instance, if we add more threads to the default scheduling group, the share of the driver scheduling group would shrink. So this is not what we want. We would come up with some reassignment scheme to reassign the weights, but this would unnecessarily complicate the implementation here. So what we ended up doing is employing a hierarchical scheduling scheme where we assign a fixed proportional share for the groups, the four groups that I mentioned in the beginning. And within the groups, we decided to use equal weights for every thread. So every thread in the group, every thread gets the same share. And this nicely relieves the user from any decision apart from in which scheduling group to run a component. About the time slice length, when you think about that, you can come up with a couple of different options here. One is that was showed in the example before, just pick a constant time slice length. We could also make the thread specific or somehow derive it from the weight. One interesting aspect that comes from the BVT scheme here is that is the idea of eliminating context switches to the same thread. So in the example that we had before where A runs two times in a row, we could also determine in the first place that we run it for twice as long. And how this is done in BVT is that when we pick a thread to run, we let it catch up in the virtual time until it catches up with the minimum virtual time of the other threads, and then execute it for a constant real time longer. So let's show an example again. We have the same weights as before. We pick A first. It runs for four real time units, and after that we pick B, and now B first catches up with the it cannot catch up actually because C still has the minimum virtual time. So same scenario for B here. So it runs for four real time units, and then for C we have the situation that now the minimum virtual time is defined by A. So C runs until it reached the virtual time of 1, and then we add 4 real time units. after that, we similar thing for A, and then B can run again. So what we end up here is, what we see here in the schedule is that in the beginning, when all threads start with the same virtual time, the time slices are a bit smaller, but over some iterations, they get some bigger chunks of time to execute. So far, in the examples, we assume that all threads just want to do computing. But in reality, of course, threads sleep, so they get unready and get ready again, signaled by something. So let's look at some examples here. Let's say, A gets unready, B is scheduled, and A becomes ready when B is currently executing. So in this scenario, A would need to wait until its virtual time is the minimum virtual time in the system before it can run again. So there's some latency waiting involved here. Another situation would be if A gets unready and gets ready after this point where it had the virtual time in the system. So in this case, we can raise the question, how long to execute A for? And here it's important that the sleeping time is not taken into account, because otherwise if A would sleep for a couple of minutes, it could also run for a couple of minutes exclusively, and that's not what we want, right? So the approach that's taken here by the BBT is that we just increase the minimum virtual time of A, increase the virtual time of A to the current minimum when A becomes ready, and effectively then we have the proportional share is maintained among all active threads. What you also see here in the examples, as I already mentioned, is that there's some latency. So in the left case, A has to wait until it has the minimum virtual time. And in the left case, if A needs a bit more execution time to finish, but it only gets a smaller time slice when it becomes ready, then it has to wait for the executions of B and C here. So how can we tune this to achieve lower latency? So we could just, maybe we could just move some of the later time slices of A more to the front. And there's a nice trick in BVT how this is achieved. It's by assigning a warp value to each thread. And with this warp value, the effective virtual time of a thread is reduced by this warp value. So as a result, the thread is at one hand preferred in this scheduling decision, and when it's scheduled, it also increases the length of its time slice. And in Sculpt, we actually applied this idea on the group level. So each group gets a warp value, and we then derive the warp state from the thread within the group with the lowest virtual time. And there's also a time limit for warping, so that, for instance, a driver thread in the broken driver scenario should not consume all this warping benefit of the entire group, because there are other threads that, when they get activated, they want to get this warping benefit. So there's a time limit. If a thread runs for too long, then its warping state is disabled. And with this basics, I want to hand over to Stefan, who has some more practical details for you.
Thank you. Thank you for waiting. So in the few remaining minutes, I would like to talk about practical considerations. So what do you need to consider when using this new conception using our custom kernel? And the short answer is not much, because if you are using Sculpt OS already, then you actually do not have to change anything within it. So there's no new configuration options or means that bother the user to choose in between those warp and wait values for scheduling groups and to decide what scheduling groups to use. In contrast to this, we use predefined scheduling groups. Surprisingly, those four groups already used on a much higher level in the Sculpt configuration. So if you configure Sculpt and spawn new components, you have to choose in between those components, and they should reside in those scheduling groups already. It's of course a little bit different if you are using the Gnode OS framework basically without Sculpt. If you tailor your own scenario, then you should keep in mind how those hierarchical priorities are mapped to those scheduling groups. And this I want to show you next. So in Sculpt, we have actually two priority levels that are important. The very first one is spawned by the top level init, which creates the static portion of the system. And it has, of course, its privilege level it starts with. So its priority level it starts with. And it defines another one, minor priority level, where most of the components reside in. And so the very first one, which is actually the top level in it itself and the timer driver, they get this driver scheduling group. Or they reside in the scheduling group of the drivers, and the rest in the multimedia group. And one of the important components over here is the runtime init process, which spawns all dynamic stuff which is going on in the system. So let's have a look at this. Surprisingly, this does not only have four priority levels, but the runtime init process itself already gains the multimedia scheduling groups, and we define lower priority levels from driver to background underneath, because to stay compliant to the other kernels, which use linear order of priorities and to fit this scheme. Because priority levels need to be in the order of two, we have three segments which aren't used actually in Sculpt. So whenever you are using, so what you should take from the slide, if you are not using Sculpt OS, then you should keep in mind that whenever you go away from the scheme, you might get unexpected results when your components reside in anything in between. So those unused segments actually land in this background group again. Yes, let's showcase something with it. I mean, it won't be that fancy like the demonstration before, but we will do our best. And when preparing this talk, we were